Predictions are dangerous.
We absolutely need more inventory.
The Fed doesn't actually have a lot of tools to regulate inflation.
That cash is dried up.
Wow, is my first thought, Bruce.
If both parties don't win, it doesn't happen.
The Real Look. Trending news.
G'day. Today's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Bruce Hardy.
And I'm Chase Williams.
And this is the news you need to know. Well, Chase, the National Association of Realtors has agreed to pay $418 million in damages to settle the Real Estate Commission's lawsuits. The trade group has also agreed to abolish the participation rule that required sell-side agents to make an offer of compensation to buyer brokers. Now, taken together, the settlement and multiple rule changes will reshape how millions of sellers and buyers transact and how their representatives get paid. What thinks you?
Well, this is big news, Bruce. NAR was one of the defendants named in these cases, right, that was still kind of fighting and hadn't settled. And now some news of their settlement is a really big deal, particularly because there's so much connection to their settlement and the rules by which many of us operate, right? The participation rule was at the center and the heart of the lawsuits to start with, right? So I actually, in a roundabout way, Bruce, I think this is welcome news for the real estate industry in that it starts to provide some clarity on what the changes will be so we can figure out how we can, you know, work with those changes to still deliver the value to our buyers and sellers that we desire to deliver, right? And so none of this takes effect immediately. It gives us as professionals some time to figure out how to make changes, implement changes, be comfortable with changes and be able to articulate and communicate those changes to those we serve. And I think that's a blessing as well. So we have more clarity than we had because of the settlement. And we've got some real specific items that we can start to go and understand and learn at a deep level.
Yeah, I think what you said there is really important, right? Slow down, right? This is not happening immediately. And according to NAR, this settlement brings an end to all of the litigation claims brought by home sellers. However, the lawsuits filed by home buyers, known as Batten 1 and Batten 2, actually will still continue. So we're not out of the woods totally. And in fact, the $418 million settlement will be paid over 4 years, and the funds will be deposited into a trust that is controlled by the court. Now, in settling, the plaintiffs in the landmark Sitzer-Burnett case in Missouri agreed to release NAR from the jury verdict. And in exchange, NAR will not appeal the case. So I think that's really interesting. And as mentioned earlier, and we talked about this, Chase, right, is that there are going to be rule changes. It's not just about the money. I mean, the money's a big deal, but the rule changes are probably going to have the bigger impact on all of this. So all fields displaying broker compensation on MLSs must be eliminated. And there is a blanket ban on the requirement that agents subscribe to MLSs in the first place in order to offer or accept compensation for their work. In fact, the settlement agreement also mandates that MLS participants working with buyers must enter into a written buyer broker agreement. Now, NAR said that these changes will actually go into effect in mid-July of 2024. A lot of still moving pieces here, Chase. And I think it's going to be interesting. What they didn't say we can't do doesn't say that we cannot compensate buyers agents for doing the deal. It's just that we can't market it or advertise it in the MLS, but we can certainly advertise it out of the MLS.
Yeah, I think it's not even necessarily how we're going to get paid, Bruce, or how much we get paid. That's been negotiable from the beginning. It's just where to access the information and what it's called. Right. So they're going to feel like big changes at first that I think are actually only slight changes. And we'll see how that plays out. But it's like a lot of the same fundamental way that we're compensated remains intact. There's just a few slight changes of where we can find the information, when we need to secure representation documentation with a buyer, for example. As an industry, by and large, we'll figure that stuff out. Right. And those that figure it out the fastest and the best will have the advantage. Right. If you think about the way that successful people think, they say, OK, well, what are the new rules? I want to learn them better than anyone can possibly learn them, because the better I understand them, the better I'll use those to my advantage, right? And not in a negative way, in a positive way. They say, if I understand them better than anybody, then I can go forward better than anyone. And I can determine what that means for my success, my business, my compensation, my clients, all the rest. So I really encourage anyone listening to this news today to go and educate yourself with what the rule changes are. And there'll be more information coming out on this as we go along. Don't feel like it happens tomorrow, because it doesn't. Keller Williams, as an example, is putting out a class called Value Squared that Gary himself is hosting that will add some context and some instruction around these rule changes. That's a good example of going and educating yourself. And also, I want to add in, Bruce, be discerning around who you allow to educate you. Because there will be people who rush out there and tell you that they're the expert on something that's brand new, by the way. I don't know how that works. Maybe don't have the same level of experience or perspective as others. And ultimately, they may be trying to sell you something. I'm not saying don't get educated. I'm saying do get educated and be really discerning of who you allow to educate you during this important time.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. If you look at social media and watch the news, everyone's an expert, right? And they've got their expert opinion about, and by the way, the range of the consequences is massive. I agree with you. And I appreciate you bringing up the Value Squared class that Gary Keller is teaching. And by the way, I think it's really fascinating, Chase, is Gary was working on this back in November of last year, right? Before there was any sign that this settlement was going to come into play. And I so appreciate his visionary outlook where he can look ahead and say, what do we do? And I think you made a great statement there, right? The rules tell us how to play the game. So whatever the rules are, that's how we play the game. But how you win the game is with strategy. And back to what you said there, Chase, is the better you understand the rules, the better your strategy can be around winning the game with those rules. Well, Chase, another story in light of this NAR settlement, commission lawsuits. One of the consequences is that this is expected to force mortgage lenders and loan officers to find new ways of approaching listing agents and borrowers. And that'll to give LOs more significant role in the home buying process and encouraging housing professionals to pursue, and I think this is interesting, dual licensing. And when I say dual licensing, I'm not talking about being licensed in two states, but I'm talking about being licensed as a loan officer and licensed as a realtor. I thought this was interesting that loan officers and mortgage executives expect home sellers and home buyers to negotiate more aggressively on commission paid to buyer's agents, potentially bringing costs down. We'll see if that's the case. However, at this early stage, it's unclear how such commissions would be paid, since buyers could pay their agents out of their pockets or negotiate commissions as a seller concession in the closing costs. In fact, Mike Cortes, who's CEO of Nexa Mortgage, sent a clear message to the over 2,300 mortgage loan officers at his mortgage brokerage. Quote, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and listen for opportunities that are going to present themselves, and be ready to assist more buyers. You should be finding buyers before real estate agents anyway. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's incredible advice from Mike. And by the way, that's advice that is solid. And even if we didn't have these changes, right? Which is what he says at the end, you should be finding buyers before real estate agents anyway. Ultimately, it's just encouraging loan officers to take his loan officers to take control of their success and their destiny and not relying on any other person for that, right? I do think it's interesting to think that loan officers are going to have to maybe rethink or re-engage in some of the relationships that they have with listing agents, right? Whereas they've been receiving a high percentage of their referrals from buyer's agents. And maybe that changes, maybe it doesn't. Again, we'll see. In terms of the dual licensing, Bruce, I don't think that's very common, in part because it's hard to be a master of two different things. And so, you know, not that it's impossible, it's just not common, right? So you see kind of people become specialists and stay in their lanes. I think loan officers are going to have the same opportunity that real estate agents have, and that's to understand the new rules, to understand how to take advantage of those rules and continue to win, and certainly to be able to communicate what those are and the impact that they have to their borrowers, whether they get dual license or not. There's going to be a lot of questions, especially as we navigate this being the new norm. Until people become used to it, there's going to be a lot of questions. So if you're the professional with the answers, regardless of what your licensing is, you set yourself in a place to win.
And as you said, the new norm. And I find it fascinating because we have short memories. And by the way, there's a lot of realtors in the business today have not been in the business that long. And what I think is fascinating is, you know, if you go back in history, back prior to 1993, buyer agency wasn't a thing. In fact, you were either the listing agent or the seller's agent, and everybody else was a sub-agent of the seller's agent. As realtors, we all represented the sellers. So I find it fascinating that we realized that that didn't really work, and we had to go down this road and provide representation for buyers. And yet, you know, this whole thing is sort of pushing it back towards the other direction. But again, whoever controls the lead, right, controls the business. And I think, one, you're looking at an industry that says, hey, here's an opportunity. Let's see if we can't get to the lead first, because the bulk of loan officers get their leads from realtors. And again, it's going to be incumbent upon us as realtors to maintain those relationships. And this is why your database matters, by the way, because if you can control that relationship, you control that transaction. And I think that's going to be a big deal. Fascinating to see. I'm sure there'll be potential for these dual licensed realtors and loan officers and realtors. But as long as they do it in a legally and a compliant manner, I think will be a key component of that.
Yeah, I think it's good advice, Bruce, no matter who you're talking to. And that's, you always want to be fishing upstream, so to speak. And that's as close to the consumer as you can get.
There is a downside that the mortgage industry is concerned about, and that is what is the impact on the disadvantaged borrower, right, who are a lower income level, particularly VA borrowers and FHA. So under current policy, fees or commissions charged by a real estate agent or broker in connection with a loan from the VA may not be charged to or paid by the veteran purchaser. So it's unclear whether the VA or the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, will be able to alter the policy by mid-July. So seller concessions for VA borrowers are also capped at 4% of the home's purchase price or appraised value and can also cover some closing costs, including the VA funding fee and prepaid taxes. And under existing FHA rules, sellers can contribute up to 6% in concessions to FHA borrowers to cover closing costs, prepaid expenses, and discount points. I am concerned, Chase, that, you know, we do not want to adversely impact those lower income borrowers. This has the potential to do that, by the way.
Yeah, it's one of those unintended consequences, Bruce, of trying to sort all this litigation out, you know, this mess of litigation. I do feel confident, though, that the government at large, Bruce, will make whatever modifications they need to some of these government-backed loans if they're necessary to make sure that these people that we really want to have the opportunity to be homeowners can still have the same advantages that they had given the changes. So the challenge is that doesn't happen immediately. It takes a time to figure out, well, what changes do we need to make so that this didn't accidentally harm this group of borrowers? I do feel confident we'll sort that out. Who knows how long that takes? And in the interim, it's something we want to pay close attention to.
Well, in more happier news, Jace, the Federal Housing Administration announced on Monday that it has raised lending limits for its Title I manufactured home loan program. And that's a move designed to align the FHA with market forces and to encourage more lenders to participate in the program as the Biden administration makes a renewed push on affordable housing. Now, the new limits make use of new methodologies for calculating and updating the program's limits, which were part of a final rule published on February 29th, FHA said. They are designed to better align with current market prices and are expected to encourage more lenders to offer the program to home buyers seeking to purchase manufactured homes and the lots on which they sit. Now, by the way, Chase, this marks the first update to the Title I program loan limits since 2008. So what thoughts do you have?
Well, I'm surprised by that more than anything, Bruce. Like, raising these loan limits is something that's pretty common on an annual basis on the single family housing side of the business. So the fact that it's been that long, what is that, 16 years, help me with my math, since they've raised the limit, that's surprising. And I'm not sure exactly why that happened. The story doesn't really, you know, speak to why it hasn't been raised in so long. but it certainly does seem in alignment with the administration's desire to, you know, make for more affordable housing in the ways that we can. And I would argue that that's probably the case on a broad scale for any administration, right? We want to solve an affordability challenge around housing. And this is just one method, one lever for doing it. So I don't think there's any other way to look at this than positive, right? Again, lots of questions around why it took so long, but it makes sense to align the limits now with market conditions as they sit today, rather than back in 2008, which, by the way, was an interesting year considering the market dynamics and the Great Recession, right?
Yep.
It's safe to say that from an affordable housing standpoint, this is great news.
Yeah. Well, the new nationwide Title I limits are effective for FHA case numbers assigned on or after March 29th, 2024. So that's going forward. Now, the limits are going to be for a combination loan, right, which is land and a single wide. The limit now will be $148,909. For a double or triple wide on its land, you'll be able to borrow up to $237,096. So again, welcome news. And obviously the market supports this. We've got to get more people into more houses, that's for sure.
Yeah, and good news for the future, Bruce. Actually, these new limits are going to be adjusted on an annual basis and are going to be added into the single family housing handbook. So again, not sure why 16 years passed, but it's great to know that that's not going to happen again, given these new limits for those that see this as a great option for them in housing.
Well, that's the news you need to know. Don't miss this Friday's Northern Lights episode, where we'll interview Bob Lucido with KW Lucido Agency in Ellicott City, Maryland, located in the Baltimore metro area. Thanks again for tuning in with us on The Real Look.
This podcast is produced by Marissa Frost. Visit kwnwr.com to access the show notes from today's episode. Head over to Apple, Google, or Spotify, or really any major streaming platform, to subscribe, and don't forget to leave us a review. Thanks again for listening to The Real Look.